And topography, now this is a fascinating thing. It turns out that the hill up, the gradient up to Hampstead is just, it's a little bit steeper than the gradient up to Highgate. And that's the reason that the main road north went up to Highgate. And again, I've read accounts of it sometimes taking 24 hours to get a heavily loaded coach up Highgate Hill. Well, Hampstead was just that much steeper. So for the longest time, Hampstead was in effect on the road to nowhere. We don't get, for example, the Finchley Road coming along until about 1830. Fitzjohn's Avenue doesn't come until the 19th century, etc. There was just the one road leading up there. And look at what that gives us. You see this is the data here, 1817. So let's look at these two. We got Hampstead here, and we got Highgate here. And look, there's actually two roads going up to Highgate, and they look like pretty good-sized roads. And you can see there's some development along both of them. Hampstead, there's just this one, and the development is not getting there. But also, very interesting, this map, in so many ways. The Heath, it's not recognized as a heath yet. I mean, lots of green space there, but it's not. You see Richmond Park. The Regent's Park exists. Richmond Park, Wimbledon Common, etc. Hyde Park, Kensington Gardens. But Hampstead Heath, there's no recognition in 1817 that Hampstead Heath is a public space of green. And then also very interesting is the business of Regent's Park being there. And this is a little bit complicated, but in terms of the development of an urban area, if you picture in your mind's eye an archery target with the bullseye and then the circles expanding out, that's the wrong way to see the development of a city. The way to see it is to think of a dartboard. And with a dartboard, it comes out as cones. So here we've got Regent's Park. And if you know Regent's Park, these great lovely terraces on either side, they're almost like arms reaching out toward Hampstead. They're going to embrace Hampstead. And Hampstead will take its lead from this. Whereas over here, you're going to get the railway there, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot going on here. And it's kind of down market considerably. So, you know, Hampstead as a really upscale suburb, that in part is conditioned by this cone effect and it happens to be Regent's Park that's here. You know, if Regent's Park was over here, Hampstead, as we know, it would probably be up here, something like that. Okay. Yeah, Lord Mansfield, a really, really important, he was a sort of chief justice. Scots, he came down when he was 14 years old and he spent the rest of his life here. And he's the one who acquired Kenwood. It dated right back to the early 1600s and it was ramshackle, it was in a bad state and he greatly developed it. The library, the orangery, etc. And he was at pains. He wanted the views from here. This is the Northern Heights, down across this open countryside to London. And he acquired every chance he got. He acquired land to protect all of that. So he's in terms of remarkable men and women, he is a hugely important player. And it just stays in that family, the Earls of Mansfield, for several generations. Right through to the 1825, which is the saving of the Northern Heights and the acquisition of Kenwood House for the public. Now, 1829 is the cartoon. This is Cruikshank. It's a famous cartoon. It's London going out of town, and look what we can see here. Over here is St. Paul's. And over there is Westminster, Parliament, Westminster Abbey. And they've done these, you know, there was this tremendous expansion in London a whole lot of building, and it was jerry-built. It wasn't well-built. Up here is Hampstead. That sign says to Hampstead. But they're all kind of, you know, these are chimneys and these are tools, and they're done as an army. And these are bricks that have almost turned into a weapon of war, artillery. They're shelling things. And the only things that have any human qualities at all are like the haymow and the animals. And this is what they thought was coming. They saw it coming up the hill, and it really worried them. They maybe needn't have worried quite so much. It's so steep, for example, that there was no way that a huge factory, for example, was ever going to be built up there, because there just wasn't enough level land. But this was what was in their minds. Hampstead was expanding in this way, and London was expanding. And this is what they were worried about coming up there. Yeah, and you got to have a villain of a piece, Marion Wilson, here he is. This is Thomas and his son, Spencer. And he owned a fairly large chunk, a critical piece of what is today Hampstead Heath. And he lived in Essex. He was an absentee landlord, and he was absolutely happy with things. But when it was agricultural land, but suddenly as London, he could see that London was pushing north. And that land became about six times more valuable if he's able to develop it. And he wanted to do that. And the wealthy bourgeoisie up in Hampstead, they did not want that to happen. And they were so powerful, they had influence in Parliament, etc., that they were able to thwart him again and again and again. But this was a long battle. The first victory was won, and it was his son, actually, Spencer. But 1871, as I said, is the first saving of Hampstead Heath. It's not until 1925 that the Northern Heights, the last piece of the puzzle. Now, if you want to know what Hampstead Heath, which is over here, would have looked like, all you need to do is look over at my bit of Hampstead, which is over here, just off the either side of the Finchley Road. And I'm not complaining about where I live, but there's quite a difference between this. You can see this is all, it's been developed. It's houses. And if Marion Wilson, his son Spencer Wilson, had their way, that's what a good-sized chunk of Hampstead Heath would have looked like as well, instead of what we've got here. Yeah, here you go. The red lines, well, it indicates here the extent of the heath in 1680. So you can see it was eaten into. It contracted. But then, finally that bit, was saved, as I said, in 1871. Now, Murray, the Mansfield, he bought Parliament Hill. As I said, eventually his estate up there ran into 1,500 acres. And this gets saved in the 1880s. And these two bits as well were added to it. But right here was the Marion Wilson chunk. And you can see that's right in the heart of things. And had they been able to do with it, Hampstead, it just wouldn't be Hampstead Heath today. So the Mansfields were willing to, they parted with about 200 acres here, but they held on to this, Kenwood. And so that's the last piece of the puzzle, and that's what they finally saved in 1925. Kenwood House is up here. And that was of critical importance. So it's very interesting. They're looking, that first Lord Mansfield, he's looking to, he wants to preserve the view this way. And then at the very end, it, in a sense, reversed itself. They wanted to preserve the view north. They had to get the Northern Heights. They had to get basically this chunk in Kenwood. And they did. Ah, yeah. This guy is one of my heroes. Arthur Crossfield. And he lived in Wittenhurst, which is the second, it's in Highgate, it's the second largest private, quote-unquote, house in London after Buckingham Palace. He was a soap magnate, an immensely wealthy, and he was the key player in the saving of Kenwood. And I'm going to be completely indulgent here now. I'm going to show you, this is Wittenhurst, this is his palatial house, 365 windows, and what's completely indulgent, and several tennis courts, completely indulgent is my showing you this. This is Mary's grandmother, and this is her great uncle, and this portrait is literally 5 feet from where I'm sitting now. Their father was an immensely wealthy stockbroker, and he was the one who sold, he called it Parkfield, he sold it to Arthur Crossfield, who it admittedly enlarged it, and it became Wittenhurst. But I love the fact that I have a kind of personal connection with the saving of Hampstead Heath. Yeah, so Warrington, it was his soapria, he was so wealthy that he really wasn't taking an active hand in all of that. But he did something absolutely miraculous, it seems to me. He persuaded immensely wealthy people who weren't Londoners, they weren't in the London area, they were industrialists in the north, in the Midlands, in places like Birmingham and Hull, to dip into their pockets, to come up with the money to buy the Northern Heights from the Mansfields, and that completed the picture. It's a kind of miracle, the whole story. And Gladstone, what's he doing here? He's better known as a prime minister, but this is just an aside. In 1853, he was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he did something quite extraordinary. Apparently there had been a really, really steep tax. It was almost a luxury tax on soap. And he lifted that tax. And that made soap affordable for poor people and working people. And you can absolutely pinpoint that date. 1853 is the date between the early Victorian period, is the watershed between the early Victorian period and the middle and late Victorian period. I mean, in for example, Dickens and other writers in the 1830s, 1840s, or 1850s, early 1850s, people talk about being able to smell the poor. They could not afford to clean themselves. And that all changes because of that act of his. And there's a connection, because the first great historian of Hampstead, Thomas Barrett, was an advertising magnate. He bought this famous painting from Millais, and this became at the center of an immensely successful advertising campaign. The birth of modern advertising rests on his campaign campaigns for soap and patent medicines. So all kinds of extraordinary threads come together. You see why I had a problem doing this, putting this thing together. It took me a year. Anyway, yeah, a final player, this was, and I don't know how to say the name, Lord Iva, one of the wealthiest. He would be the Bill Gates, I suppose, today. He was the heir of the Guinness fortune. And our man, Crossfield, persuaded him to buy Kenwood and thus the land. And he was an old man when he bought it. And he didn't have a direct heir, and he persuaded him to, and he lived for about 8 years or so, and Crossfield persuaded him, to leave it to the public, and that completed the picture, and here we are. This is 1925. It's George V up there, and a huge crowd of Londoners, and they're on Hampstead Heath, and they're celebrating that huge victory, the saving of Kenwood. And the saving of the Northern Heights. This is a very interesting image, not least because of these two. There's a generation thing here. Look at her dress and how long it is. And look at this one. This woman's probably 30 years younger. It's a different generation, isn't it? But there's a lot of leg, a lot of ankle there. It's a fascinating social document, just that one image. Yeah, and I mean, people don't realize this, but of course, there's this huge art collection. It's probably the sixth most important art collection in London at Kenwood House, including, of course, Rembrandt. And so finally, we can start our walk now. and this is where I meet you, and we're going to go this way round, and we're going to end probably here in Church Row, or maybe we'll just go a little bit up Holly Walk to end.